Thanks for coming. My name is Brian Harry. I'm a technical fellow, and I work on Team Foundation Server. I'm going to tell you today a little bit about what we're doing in Team Foundation Server in TFS 2010. I hope most, or many of you at least, had an opportunity to see Cameron Skinner's talk just a little while ago on a lap around Team System. It was a very good high-level overview. The 2010 release for Team System is a very, very big release. There is so much stuff in there. Generally, when we try to, even internally, when we try to demo it to somebody, it's about an eight-hour demo to show the breadth of what we're doing. I'm going to show you a bit about Team Foundation Server. There's a lot. There's no way I can show you all of it. I'll show you sort of as much as I can, and then hopefully in the Q&A, you'll sort of let me know what else you want to hear about, and we can talk about that. There are a bunch of other talks going on this week. I think in all, there are about 13 Team System talks. At the back, there's a card that looks like this on the front and has a list of all the talks on the back. I've also got a stack of them up here, so feel free to come and get them when the talk's over to find out what else there is. There's a couple talks I'm going to reference specifically throughout the talk. There's one immediately after this by Lori Lamkin on, I forget what the title is, but it's basically Agile Development with Visual Studio and Visual Studio Team System. I'm going to reference her talk a bunch. There's another talk by Stephanie Sod later in the week that is on how we use Team Foundation Server internally at Microsoft. She's going to cover a bunch of Team Foundation Server content. I've tried to adjust my talk to not overlap too much with theirs, but give you a good overview of what we're doing. On to the good stuff. All right. I've sort of broken down the functionality of Team Foundation Server into six major areas that I'm going to talk about. The first is protecting the quality of your code. That's about making sure that the quality of your code that makes it into the tree is high quality, and that if there are issues, they're found early and rejected and fixed before you have an opportunity to get the build in a bad state. Another section on understanding parallel development. It's one of the biggest issues that I hear customers struggle with, is how do we manage parallel development? How do I understand what's going on in a complex development environment where I have lots of branches and lots of releases and lots of builds? Managing your project. We've done a lot of work in the 2010 release to make managing your project even easier. I'll talk about that. I'm going to talk about reporting on your entire portfolio. In Team Foundation Server 2005 and in 2008, most of our BI features are project-centric. They're about what's going on in a project. There isn't a lot to really help you understand what's going on across a portfolio of projects. We're doing a lot in 2010 on that. Next one is coordinating across development platforms. I'm going to talk about TeamPrice and Eclipse, Java, Unix, and Mac development. I know a lot of you got to watch as I sort of prepared my demo going on in the beginning because my screen is not working. I get to either project on my screen or on the large screen. How many were surprised that they saw me pull up Eclipse? I figured that might raise a few eyebrows. Sort of odd to come to a Visual Studio talk and see me launching Eclipse. I'll do a demo of Eclipse and Eclipse accessing Team Foundation Server. Lastly, I'm going to talk about administering TFS in your environment. We've done a ton of work in improving the flexibility and the scalability of TFS for large enterprises. I will talk about that. Getting straight in, protecting the quality of your code, as far as team, there's a lot across Team System on that, particularly in the testing arena. With respect to Team Foundation Server, I focus mostly in the build area. There's a set of features. The first is a feature called gated check-ins. There's two variations of it, gated check-in and buddy build. I think of gated check-in as an evolution of continuous integration. Continuous integration, I do a check-in. It goes into the system. The build server kicks off, builds it, and immediately flags if there's an error. Somebody sees, oh, the build is broken. I'll go fix that. The idea is check in often, identify integration issues early, and fix them quickly. That works very well, particularly in small teams. As teams get larger and larger, what you find is that the build is always broken. And you need a way to be more proactive than that about preventing the build from getting broken. And so gated check-in is this sort of this evolution that instead of checking in my changes and then building, it builds, run tests, and then checks in my changes. I'm not actually going to do a demo of gated check-in. Lori's going to do, Cameron actually did a demo, I think, in his talk, and Lori's also going to do a demo in her talk. So if you see either one, you'll get to see that feature. A variation of gated check-in is buddy builds, which is basically the same thing except it doesn't check in. So I've making some changes, and you know the old, it works on my machine, but it doesn't work on anybody else's. Buddy builds is a way for me to package up my changes, ship it off to the build server, have it build it, run the tests, and let me know whether they work or not in a clean, independent environment. Another big evolution of build in the 2010 release is workflow-based build. So in 2008 and 2005, TFS is based on MS Build. It's still based on MS Build, but we've implemented a layer on top of MS Build based on Windows Workflow, and I'm going to do a pretty in-depth demo on that, so I'll show you how that works. We've also added build queuing. So now the build machine can manage a queue. You can reprioritize your builds. You can cancel builds that are in the queue. Makes it much easier to manage a lot of people doing a lot of builds. Further in that direction, we've added build agent pooling. So I can set up a farm of build machines, and then as I kick off builds, it will just find available build machines, allocate them, and start builds on them. And then lastly, we've done symbol server and source server support. This makes it way easier to debug builds that come out of the build, because frequently, and you got a build that comes out of the build lab, you don't have the source on your machine. You don't have the symbols. It was built in the build lab, and some tester finds a bug, and you need to track down the cause of that bug. You need to have access to that information. This makes it completely transparent, where I can attach a debugger to that process. It can load the appropriate symbols and source code out of TFS and automatically allow you to debug it. So I'm going to do a demo of configuring a build, showing you the new workflow-based stuff. So let's start. It starts the same way. You do new build definition. And we see, you know, some very simple things like give the build a name. And I can give it a description. There's nothing new there. The triggers are mostly the same, except we've added gated check-in. So I can now mark this build as a gated check-in build, and any check-ins that affect this build will be blocked until they are built properly, but I'll leave this as a manual build. So let's set up my workspace. I'm just going to copy an existing workspace and then delete one of the mappings. So now I've defined what source I'm going to put in this build at the DinnerNow main branch that I'm going to be building. And this is where it's going to be located. So now I set some defaults on the build. By default, it's going to run on the default build controller. I talked about these build pools. So I'm basically identifying what build pool I'm going to operate or what I'm going to use to build this. So let me hit manage just to show you what that is. So I've got a controller and two build agents, one default agent, which is just what is created out of the box, and a separate one I created called bond. You can hit properties and see that the controller's on this machine. I can specify how many agents a build can use. I can enable and disable it. The default agent is also on this machine. It sets the path that it's going to use to do the build. And over here, we've got this feature called tags. So you can tag build agents that identify the capabilities of that build machine. And then when I configure a build, I can say what the capabilities are required to run that build. So it can do intelligent matching of the build machines versus what the build needs. So I've just done something very simpler here and tagged it as a Win2K8 machine. And then the third build agent is also on this machine. So this is another new thing, is I can configure multiple build agents on the same machine, which makes it easier for me to manage reconfiguring my agents. All right, so I'm going to leave it as the default build controller. And I need to put a drop share. So that's where it's going to copy the drop when the build is finished. And this is where the interesting stuff gets. So this is the a workflow designer that we've built on top of Windows Workflow. This top part, this part right here, is my build workflow, and I'm going to walk you through how you sort of look at all the steps here in the build workflow. But this section up here is the required stuff you have to fill in. So it sort of is just an accelerator to let you know you could go muck around in the detailed build, or you can use sort of just a default template and fill in the key things that I need. So an example here is I want to specify what projects I'm going to build. And I'll go into... So pick that one. I could pick multiple. I can also pick a set of tests that I want to run as part of this build. So there, I've configured everything that I needed to. I could just save this build definition and go, and this thing would build. But I want to walk you through a little bit about how this works. So a little more overview of what we've got here. As I say, this section here is your workflow. Over here is your toolbox with your activities that you can use to customize the workflow. And over here is the property grid for filling in the properties on the tasks that you add. So the first step on this build definition is to update the build number and drop location, which is a standard sequence activity in Windows Workflow that consists of three things. Update the build number, format the full drop location, and set the drop location. Let's look at update the build number for a minute. So the key property here in update the build number is this build number format. We can see the build number format is it's a macro substitution that uses the build definition name, the date, and a build increment number. And here's an example of what a build would look like. Now, you may decide you don't like your build numbers looking that way. So we've got a set of macros, which are extensible, that you can use to make your own build definition. So maybe, let's just make it simple, maybe I'd like to have my team project included as part of my build number. And so that's how you can customize the build number. You can write your own. If you don't like our task for generating build numbers, you can write your own task for generating build numbers. Formatting the drop location, you start with a format string. It's got three components. Those three components are specified right here. It uses the drop location root, the build definition name, and the build number to make the drop location. That will make your full path. So that's sort of roughly. I'm not going to go through every one of these because it would get really boring fast. I'm now going to start skipping to just a few interesting highlighted ones. Select an agent and build is a very interesting task. This is the part that does the agent matching, that's going to pull an agent out of the pool and allocate some work to it. You'll see here this reservation spec. I can type the name of a build agent if I want, or I can use star, which means any build agent. And I can also type a list of tags that the agent needs to have. So I'll say this one needs to be, well, actually, I don't want to do that because I have not tested that. But I noticed I didn't check one of the checkboxes, so I'm a little worried that I don't want to do that. But I could. If I tagged my agents right, that would work. That's the most interesting thing here. You can do a timeout value, but nothing all that exciting. The next really interesting task, you can sort of see we initialize the workspace, which does things like delete all the old stuff, create your new workspace, and get all the source. We create a label. The next interesting one is compile and analyze labels. There's a compile and test. And we finally get down to compile all projects, which is a replicator activity. And basically what that does is take an input, which is a sequence of things, and we'll execute the contained workflow on all of them. So it takes a list of projects, which is the build projects, which is what I defined at the very beginning when I went through and clicked the checkbox for the list of projects I wanted to build. And it will execute the compile a project task on all of those projects. And ultimately, goes down to run MS build for the project. And you've got all of your fairly standard MS build parameterization that you can do there, including passing arbitrary MS build arguments if you want to. And then once it's all built, we've got some tasks for managing impact analysis. So a new feature in Team System is the ability to do test case prioritization, to look at the changes you've made, look at your code coverage data on your tests, and determine what tests have been affected by the changes. So that information is now automatically generated as part of the build. We then run the tests. Again, it's another replicator task, this time going through all of the test projects that I specified. And we'll go through and run MS test for each project. Another form of testing, there's two forms. You can do MS VSMDI, or you can automatically find the tests in a DLL. It does an analyze labels to determine what all your changes were and update all your work items and all your change sets between this build and the previous build, and then ultimately copy the drop to the destination. So what I want to do now, with a sort of a high-level overview of what this does, let's do something interesting here. What I want to do is, it's based on workflow. Let's do something cool workflow-ish. What I'd like to do is create a parallel build. So I'm going to take this build. I want to build both debug and release, but I want to do it on two separate machines and not have it run sequentially on a single machine. So what I'll do is I'll grab a parallel activity. Which defines two do-in-order sub-items. And I'm going to move select an agent and build under the first one. And then I'm going to want to build the other one as well. So I'm going to do a control drag and copy it under that one. So I now have two builds that right now are clones of each other. So they would build exactly the same thing. I probably don't want that. So what I'll do is drill into the run MS build, and I will say I want this one to build debug. And then I'll go down here to do the same thing. And this one I will set to build a release configuration. Now, a couple other things to think about. I really don't want it to create two different labels, one for the release build and one for the debug build. I'm happy with one. So I'm going to delete this one out of the second one. Don't need that one. And I also don't need it to analyze the labels the second time, since I'm not going to create the labels. So I'm going to delete the analyze labels task. And now I've just got a basic compile and build task without the label work. Now, the last thing I need to do is, this build was set up to copy the results to the drop location. Well, I'm now doing two builds, and I don't want them to both go to the same drop location and overwrite each other. So I need to fix up the two so that they appropriately copy into subdirectories of the drop location. So what I'm going to do is go to, here's the copy outputs to drop location. And I need to format a new drop location string, or a new drop location path. So let's create a format debug drop location task. And what I'm going to want to do there is take the format string and put debug on the end of it. And now I'm going to want to bind the first parameter. Parameter 0 corresponds to argument 0. I want to bind that to the drop route. So this is a workflow capability to bind the input of this task to the output of another task. So what I'm going to want to do is go to there it is. Build detail, drop location. So I've now set this up to be drop location slash debug. This will go into the debug subdirectory in the drop location. And the last thing I need to do is take the copy and bind it instead of, right now, it is bound to that drop location. I need to bind it to the format debug drop location, formatted string. So there we go. I've set it up. I need to do exactly the same thing for the release build, just format the string. I'm not going to walk you through that. But I've now done it. I've now saved a copy of this. I'm going to run it. I'm going to run my saved copy in just a second and show you that it works. The last thing I want to show you before I go on and do that is in 2008, we introduced the notion of build retention policies. Well, we've extended the notion of build retention policies. First, we've added a new type of build retention policy. We've differentiated between triggered and manual versus private. So private is basically a buddy build or a gated check-in where I'm just building my change set. And it's very common you're going to want a different build retention for that than you are for like the nightly builds. Further, we've added the ability to control what gets deleted when a build is deleted. So we get a lot of people getting feedback that sometimes they don't want the drop deleted, they don't want the test results deleted, they don't want the label deleted. So we've now made it possible to specify how much information you want to delete and how much you want to preserve. So the most common one I see is people want to keep the label around. So I can define that, and now when those builds are deleted, the label is kept around. That's defining a build. Let me real quick, I saved one called parallel build. And let's queue a new build of parallel build. And it's going to run on the default controller. It's going to drop to build drops. So we can see that it started. We can see that there are two TFS build agents running on this machine. And they're both non-zero CPU utilization, so they're both doing something. So I'll open up the build report. And we can see as it displays log information, at the moment we can see that it's running two copies of getting sources. Another thing I want to show you in this build report, another new feature, A, we've completely redone the look of the build report. And if you're familiar with the 2008 build report, it looks a lot better than the last one did. But one of the cool things we've done is added a little histogram for builds that shows for the last, I think it's 5 or 6 builds, how long that build took and whether it succeeded or failed. So it gives you sort of an idea of about how long to expect this next build to take if they're consistent, obviously, if they're bouncing up and down, it's not helping you much. But the rightmost one is the current build. So right now we're running a little bit longer, but the build is just about finished. There you go. The build is finished, and it succeeded. There you go. It built on 2 builds, debug and release simultaneously on 2 different agents. And this is relatively easy to configure, just modifying a few properties. All right, so now I'm going to take you to the next feature area I want to show you. which is understanding parallel development. So, like I say, the number one thing I hear from customers is a lot of difficulty managing branches, figuring out how to structure their stuff, figuring out what's happening in branches, how to merge stuff between branches. We've done a lot of work in this area. First, we've made branches first-class citizens. They are real objects in the system. I'm going to show you sort of how to think about that. We've added tools for visualizing branches to draw pictures of your branch tree and manipulate that tree graphically. We've gone through all of our features that manage history and extended them to all understand merges and tunnel through merges. We've completely redone our conflict resolution UI, so it's not modal anymore, and the information it presents is way more helpful in understanding what the conflicts are. And we've also added rollback as a first-class feature. So let's go to a demo on that. So I'll start by just, in Source Control Explorer, showing you that you'll see there's two different kinds of icons now. There used to only be one. There's folders and there's branches. Branches are real things in the system. And branches can be organized into folders. Like here's a folder of branches. Here's a folder of private branches. And branches have special properties. So branches have owners. So you know if you need to figure out what's going on in a branch, you know who to talk to. They have descriptions that explain what they're for. They have relationships to other branches. And they have permissions for being able to control who's allowed to work in that branch. So let's sort of walk through an interesting scenario. So if you're not already, hopefully you will soon become familiar with this Dinner Now application that we've been using. It's sort of our universal sample. But I'm working in this Dinner Now application, and I'm in the test branch. So this is, if you sort of imagine some kind of a promotion process, that there's a dev branch that goes ultimately into a test branch when it's ready to test. And there's a problem, and I found a bug. Clearly, somebody had put some temporary code in here to test the 2000 date and took out the code that sets the real date. Well, that's not good. So I'm kind of curious how that happened. Now, I'm going to have to, unfortunately, work around one bug in this build and go to annotate the long way instead of the short way. Normally, you can just right-click on the line. It'll take you right to the information. That's what it should have done. Right-click and go right here. But what I can see is that this code was last changed by the user TFS setup. And if I look closely, I can actually see that it was changed in private branches B Harry. Now, if you're using TFS 2008, which is where we introduced the annotate feature, what you would have seen here is that this was that this check-in came in as a merge, and it would just say merged from some branch, and it wouldn't tell you who did it. You wouldn't be able to go easily to the change set, see what work items were associated with it, what the comment was, what other files were checked in, what the check-in notes were. So we've made essentially annotate now drills through merges to find who originally made the change, not who merged it into your branch, and shows you that information straight away. Now, I want to get a little more information on that. So let's look at the history of that, and let's see some new features in history. I can see that it came into my branch as a merge. And it came, sorry, I need to show you this. It came into the branch as a merge from main, from the main branch, which was a merge from the kiosk branch, which was a merge from the B-Harry branch. So again, easily drill down through all the successive merges to understand what happened. I can view each of these change sets to see all the details of that change. Well, this is kind of complicated, and I'm wondering if I can't see this even better. So let's see. You know, I can see that this change went here, but this change might have gone to a bunch of other branches. So I can say track change set. Say I want to track all the changes. And this shows me a chronological view of how that change flowed through branches. Green means that change is in the branch, and red means that change never made it to the branch. So I can see it was originally checked in B. Harry, it then went to kiosk, it then went to main, and then it went to test. Well, that's pretty cool. But I still don't have a good picture for how these branches relate to each other. So it shows me sort of a timeline view, but we can switch to a branch hierarchy view and see, oh, I see. It was done in B. Harry, it was then reverse integrated into kiosk, and then reverse integrated into main, and then forward integrated into test. Okay, now I think I understand how I ended up getting this change. Now I'm kind of wondering how I'm going to go about getting this fixed. So let's go look at the history in the B. Harry branch and see if Brian ever discovered this problem. So I went going through the Source Control Explorer, navigate from the branch to the Source Control Explorer, and view history. And sure enough, I see that there's another change after it. We can see that this was tracking change set 45. There's a subsequent 49 that says, I didn't mean to check in that test code. So let's do a real quick compare these two change sets. Well, they only had one file in them, so let's compare those files. And sure enough, he's reverted the change from the original test code that he left in back to the proper code. And one more thing I wanted to point out. This change is, in fact, actually a rollback. So I'm not going to walk through how to do a rollback, but what he did was checked in the change and then rolled that change back, and it took out all the changes. All right, so we've now determined that that change has been fixed. Well, clearly the fix is not in my branch, but what about other branches? Has that change ever gone anywhere else? So again, I'll do a track change set. And I'll say, oh, okay, so that change got RI'd into kiosk. I can refresh my memory of sort of how that looks in the tree. But it never made it up to main, and it never made it over to the test branch where I am. Well, now that we kind of know what the situation is, let's fix this. So I'm going to take this change in kiosk, and I'm just going to drag it down to dinner now main. And pops up the merge wizard. And yeah, I want to merge everything. Just say done. So I have the merge. Now I need to do a check-in before the merge, before this merge is completely done. So I'll check in the merge changes. Refresh my picture. And sure enough, that change has now made it into main. Now, the next thing I want to do is going to require, there's a lot of branches in this picture, and a bunch of them I don't care about. So I'm going to take out some of these branches out of this picture. Just try to focus on the ones that I care about. Make it a little bit more manageable. And now I'll just drag this, actually, before I do that, there was one more thing I wanted to do. I want to create a conflict here. So let's imagine that I had changed this and stuck in let's imagine I'd put that in there, go back to my track, and now I'm going to drag this down to test. I get the exact same UI except a bug that it should have picked the test folder and instead picked a different one. And it'll do the same thing and merge over there. Except this time, I get conflicts. And the first thing that you'll notice is that the conflicts are no longer a modal dialog. They're in the pending changes tool window. And that means it's much easier to manipulate this, to go look at other things while you're investigating what's going on. The next thing you'll notice is that there's a whole lot more information here about the changes, including what version ranges are conflicting. And in this case, I know I just want to take the source branch. So I'll take the source branch. It's going to reload the file. If I go back, I'll have a checkout. Let's do a quick diff and make sure. Yep, sure enough, it's been reverted back to what it's supposed to be. And I can check in. Once more, run refresh. And see that the change has now made it into the test branch. So the bug has now been eradicated everywhere that it ever went. The last thing I want to show you is just generally another view of branches, which is useful, that just outside the context of tracking the flow of a change allows you to generally look at your branch hierarchy. So I've asked it to show me the branch structure for BHairy. Up here I've got a combo box which controls the view. I can see the full hierarchy, which allows me to see how they relate to each other. I can look at just ancestors and descendants. I can, if I recall correctly, I can switch. If I want to drill in on my parent and look at his ancestors and children, parent and descendants, different views to be able to manipulate that from here. I can do things like look at the properties. I can open it in the Source Control Explorer. I can create a new branch. So if I want to create a new branch off of Kiosk, I can just right here create a branch. I'm not going to do it because it'll take a minute. And up will come a new bubble with the new branch in it. That's sort of it. And I think you'll find that these features are going to make it tremendously easier to manage your parallel development. All right, so back to the slides for a minute. We're not going to stay on slides very long. So the next area I wanted to talk about was managing managing your project. There's a bunch of features around managing your project. A bunch of them I'm not going to talk about because Lori and Stephanie are going to talk about quite a few of them. The first one that I'm just thrilled with is a new set of Excel workbooks that are bound to TFS that we call them Agile Project Management Workbooks. There's a sheet for managing your backlog, a sheet for managing iteration planning and balancing, and a sheet for managing ongoing stand-up meetings as you manage your progress. Go to Lori's talk. It's right after this one. She'll show you how that works. It's really cool. One of the core underlying things we did in 2010 is work item linking and hierarchy. That I am going to demo, and I'll show you a lot. But it's one of the things our customers have been asking us for a lot is, hey, it's great that I can do flat lists. It's even great that I can relate those things. But I'd like to have more formal semantics around the relationships. I want to be able to do work breakdown and roll up the results. So we did a bunch of work around that. We also just did some nice work item usability things. Our controls now have rich text support, which I'll demonstrate. We've got a new links control, which is very powerful. You can now embed HTML controls in your work item forms. We've also done drag and drop for rearranging work item dependencies. Traceability queries, so a rich query language in the Query Builder for being able to query across work items and relationships. I'll show you some of that. Query folders for organizing as your number of queries get out of control. And improvements to Excel and Project. So we will very quickly go back to demo. You may have figured out by now that I don't have very many slides. All right, so let's start just with a basic overview. So the first thing you'll notice, you know, my queries and team queries is unchanged. It's the way it's been forever. But we now have folders under that to allow me to arrange my queries. And folders have security. So the cool thing about this is you don't have to be project administrator anymore to publish a query for other people to see. You can create folders, give anybody you want permission to them, and enable people to publish their queries for other people to see. So let's start with the list of user stories that we have. So one of the things you'll see Lori talk about is our new Agile template. We've refactored it a bit, simplified it some. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the changes in process that that implies, but instead I'm going to sort of focus on the cool work item features that we used and what you can use to customize your own process. So one of the first things I want to show is the rich text. So I can say, so URLs are automatically detected and they're links, so I can link to them. Very handy for referencing things inside your bug descriptions. I can bold, I can underline, change the color of things, make it really big. Change the font. I suppose nothing particularly novel in the grand scheme of things, but novel for us because you couldn't do it before. So I think it's going to make it much easier. You'll be able to get much nicer work item descriptions. Next, I want to talk about the link control. The link control, if you in today, in 2005 and 2008, there's one links control, and it has all links. The new links control we've implemented allows you to multi-instance it, so you can have as many links control as you want, and you can associate a query with that links control, so it'll display a subset of them. So on this implementation tab, I have a query which shows just the child tasks of this user story. The other thing that you'll see is that it's pulling data, like the state and who it's assigned to. I could pull remaining work. I could pull anything out of that work item and show it directly in the links control to substantially reduce the amount of navigation that I have to do to get the information that I want. In this case, you'll see there's also a test cases links control, which, oops, there are no test cases for this user story. More on that in a minute. And then there's our general purpose other links for anything that you want to capture that's not you haven't done a specific link control for. But you can create any link that you want, any links control that captures any subset and any properties from the linked work items. It's going to make, again, a much richer experience for people. So this is all nice that I can see this, but it still is giving me a hard time to get a big picture of what's going on. So what I'd like to do is I notice that I've got these child tasks of this user story. Is there any way I can sort of see this more pictorially? And the answer, of course, is yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said so. You'll see this combo box here allows me to pick the type of query. So there's now three types of queries. The flat list is sort of what we've always had. I'm going to tell you about the third one in a minute. Right now, I'm going to tell you about tree of work items. I don't care about that. What you'll see here, if you look at the title, you notice there's indentation. What you're seeing is user stories and the tasks that make up those user stories. So we have hierarchical work items. And it's real easy if I now want to arrange my hierarchical work items. If I want to say, oh, this is actually a work item for this task or this user story. Oh, and it's actually a subtask of this one. And oh, by the way, so is that one. And I want to right-click and add a new linked work item. Got this new thing that shows I'm creating a child task. I can type, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I can type the task. Well, I will. What the heck? A new task. Okay. Fill out the information. Save it. And I think I have to hit refresh to get it to show up right now. Sure, save the modified work item. And there's a new task that's a subtask under that. So real easy way to be able to manage your hierarchy fluidly. You're supposed to applaud for that. With how many times I get asked about that every month, somebody ought to applaud. So the question was, will these links follow predecessor and successor relationships with project? I'm not going to show project, but the answer is yes. Not only the successor predecessor, but the project hierarchy is now all round tripped back and forth. Now, but I will show, I'm going to save this query. I'm going to save it as a private query. And I'm going to open that query in Excel. Notice the little tree list percent parens next to it. That indicates that something different is going to happen this time. Come on. There we go. All right, let's make a little room here. The main thing that you want to notice is that there are now multiple title columns, and that Excel shows the same hierarchy as Team Explorer does, and you can manage it just as easily in here as you can in Team Explorer. So I can just use standard Excel. I could insert a new row here, type more tasks, very free form, do my work breakdown, hit save, and it will create that hierarchy in Team System. So another cool thing I want to show you about this that we did. Oops, that was not it. We now support all the Excel conditional formatting stuff. So I'm going to take remaining work, do the conditional formatting. I'm going to take priority. And let's say I'm going to do color schemes. And I kind of like that one. So I can do all this. You can do it today. The problem is, as soon as I do this, go to team and hit refresh, it wipes it all out. But not anymore. Not only can I do that, but I can also do things like insert my own columns, and I might want to say have a column that computes, let's say, original estimate minus remaining plus completed. Oh, and except it did it as a, I don't know why it did that. Oh, did I type? All right. Anyway, I'm not going to try to figure out exactly what I did wrong. But it will, you can do your own columns, and it will preserve those columns. And I can then do conditional formatting on those. It now allows you to have much more customizable Excel workbooks. I can write script in here. We'll preserve it all. And some of the, and Stephanie will probably talk about some of the things that internal teams have done with this to build really cool spreadsheets that they use to manage their project. Yeah, come on. All right, so the next thing I want to show you, one more Excel feature. We get a lot of feedback that creating reports in Excel, or creating reports for Team System is really hard. We're trying to make that a lot easier, A, by making the warehouse more approachable, but we've done a feature that we're pretty happy with that enables me to create, to sort of get a start on reporting by starting with a work item query. So if I take a work item query, let's say active bugs, of which right now there are five, not particularly interesting, But let's create a report in Microsoft Excel on active bugs. What that's going to do is launch Microsoft Excel and give me some options of what kind of reports I want to create. So by default, it's going to give me a current report. Let's say I also want a trend report, but I don't want it pivoted by these. So I'm just going to create four reports here. Say finish. And what it's doing is it's taking that query, it's parsed the query, looked at the fields it's pulling back, mapped it to the data warehouse, created a set of Excel pivot tables and graphs that then are going to make it real easy for me to see that data. So it creates a nice little help page with links to the various things, information on how to better understand the cube that we have and how to work with it. Here's my current work item count by priority, current work item count by assigned to, a trend report, and I'm just in Excel now. So I can say, you know, I like my trend reports, my work item trend reports. I prefer to have be stack charts. So now I've got a stack chart. And now that I've got this night starting, I can say, you know, I would like to filter that on an area path. So I can just drag that down to filter, go down to the area path, and say, you know, I really only want to look at bugs in dinner now, not in the rest of this project. So real simply, the ability to get a good start based on a query you understand, a set of reports, both breakdown on current state and on trend, and then to iteratively customize them. Okay, so what about that last kind of query? What else can this thing do for me? Let's close some stuff out. Let's take a look at this query, which is called User Stories Without Test Cases. So I'm going to open that. And I can see that there are 5 user stories without test cases. Well, that's not good. I can come down here. I can add some test cases. Basically the same way I showed you before with the right click allows me to say I want to browse, open test cases, find. Let's just pick some test cases and add them. Okay, now I've added some test cases for this one. If I rerun this query, presumably I will only see 4 that don't have test cases. That's pretty cool. How did it figure that out? Because that was not just a simple query of a work item. It's stories that don't have any test cases related to them. All right, well, let's figure out what that magic is. Let's go to edit the query. Well, the first part of this is what you're familiar with. You'll see a filter, team project is this, and work item type is user story. You'll see the dropdown up here is work items and direct links. So this is how we do dependency analysis. So this all down here is new. The first thing you'll see is a filter on what's being matched. So I'm looking for user stories that are linked to test cases. And there are 3 things you can do with that link. You can, as I've done here, say only return the items that do not have the specified links. Or I could say only return the items that do have the specified links. So let's hit that real quick. So now I can see user stories and the list of test cases that they have. Now there's a weird one here. For some reason, some user story has children that are test cases. That's kind of weird. I don't really want to count that. So let's not return links of any type. Let's just return tested by and hit refresh. And the children ones are now gone. Or I can say, you know, I actually want a combined report that's not just my user stories and the ones that are tested and the ones that are not tested. I actually want to show all, both ones that are tested and ones that aren't tested combined. So that's sort of what your 3 different link type queries do. I might say, you know what, I want to see, let's do one more here. I want to show all user stories that have priority one test cases, because you know, I hope most of my user stories have some kind of high priority test case associated with them. Well, as it turns out, this test data doesn't, so that might be good to know. It turns out they are all priority two test cases. So I point that only to say it's very powerful. I can filter on, essentially we think of it as left-hand side, right-hand side, and link in between. I can filter on the left-hand side, I can filter on the types of links, and I can filter on the right-hand side to answer just about any question you can imagine on understanding how two sets of work items relate to each other. Let me hold questions. I'm going to be done here pretty soon, and we'll do the questions at the end. The last thing I wanted to show on the work item tracking stuff is we've added, let's do a new query. Since one thing we did is, used to be when you did new query, you basically got a blank form, and people would kind of be startled, particularly when they were new to TFS and didn't quite know what to do. So we put in the most common fields that people are used to just to make it easy. Come on. So this is active bugs assigned to me. But what I really want, I'd like to have a query that's active bugs assigned to anybody on my team. And I don't want to have to enumerate everybody on my team, particularly as that changes. It's kind of a pain. So we've added a new ability called in group, and conversely not in group. And you get a list of groups. And I can say, show me all the bugs assigned to anybody, in this case in the contributors group, but it could be your team, it could be whatever you want. And those groups are just the TFS groups that we manage. So the same ones you use to manage permissions, I can now use in queries to be able to more easily get sort of organizationally oriented queries. There's one last thing I want to mention that I can't demo because it's not in this build, but I have to mention it because it's really cool. Today in our work items, it's always, you're querying a field against a constant, right? It's state equals active, priority greater than 3. What we've added is the ability to compare two fields. So I can say, remaining work less than original estimate or, that kind of thing. So I can actually take two fields and do relational comparisons on them in the query. When you see our support that we're going to be doing for Project Server, you'll kind of understand why. It gives you a real nice ability when the project manager and the dev team are out of sync on how long something's going to take or whether or not something is supposed to be complete. It gives the ability to really easily identify the areas in which the project manager and the dev team are out of sync. Okay, so that is the work item tracking stuff. Let's just do a real quick time check. Yeah, running low on time. Back to the slides. So the next thing I want to show is I want to talk briefly about report on your entire portfolio. I have no demo for this because Lori is going to do a whole demo around this. We've done a lot of work on dashboards. We've embraced Microsoft Office Server, SharePoint Server, as a great dashboard technology, not as a required one, but if you have it, we do some great work. The Team System Web Access has been sort of refactored into a set of SharePoint web parts that you can put onto SharePoint pages and customize the way you want. I showed you the Excel reports. And you can put them in Moss. We've done a bunch of work on the relational warehouse to make it easier to use. Excel reporting I showed you. Go see Lori's demo. She's going to show you all this stuff. So the next thing I want to talk about is Eclipse and TeamPrize. So TeamPrize is our cross-plat story for Team Foundation Server. They do a terrific job. Now, you're going to have to forgive me. I am an Eclipse idiot. I think I've used it about 3 or 4 times. And now I'm going to try to use it again, and hopefully I won't make a fool of myself. So what I'd like to do is look in the builds. Let's view the current builds. Now, if I look at the completed builds, I'll see there's this build that's a Java CI build that has failed. And so somebody has broken the Java build. And I can see this in Visual Studio because they've integrated into Team Build, and the Java build results are just part of the just part of Team Build. So I can open that up, and I get the build report. I can view the test results. I have to give it a place to download the test results. Creatively named test results. And I can see that this build failed due to a failed unit test. There's the failed unit test right there. I can from here very easily create a bug against that unit test. Easily, but perhaps not as quickly as I'd like. There we go. Thank you. I'm going to be brief here because I want to make sure I have time for some questions. So I've saved that bug. I can go over to Eclipse, and I can look at my work items. I can hit refresh. And somewhere in here probably is that bug, but I'm not going to try to find it right now. I can fix the bug, which is right here, a very creative bug that, notice auto checkout. It automatically checked out the file. Oops. And I can save that change. I've got a pen. Notice this looks a lot like the Visual Studio integration. I can check that in. That's checking that in. That's going to behave like any other check-in into Team System. It's going to kick off. That happens to be part of a continuous integration build. It's going to kick off a continuous integration build. I can go look at that build report. I could do it here. I could do it in Visual Studio. While that build's running, I was going to show you a few other things. They've implemented a source control explorer, which, again, looks surprisingly like the Visual Studio one. They've still got to catch up with us on the 2010 feature, so they don't have the cool branch visualization stuff yet, but I suspect they will be not far behind us on that. All the build definitions are here. I should be able to view the builds from here as well. And I can see that the Java CI build just completed successfully. And I can, just to prove it, I can do the same thing from Visual Studio. If I go to the Build Explorer and come on, there it is. Refresh, I now have a completed Java CI build. So a very integrated solution across the board. We have a lot of customers who do combined .NET, C++, Java. They use Team Foundation Server. They use Team Prize. It's a good solution. And that is it. I am done. I want to take a few minutes to take questions, and I want to remind everybody to go grab one of these to learn about all the other sessions. Come up, please come up to the mic. And I'll be doing round robins on the mic. Okay, we'll start over here on the left.
Yeah.
Yep, go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, the build stuff, is it backward compatible with .NET 1.1 and 2.0?
Yes, the build stuff, you can build 2.0 and 1.1 applications all on the same build servers with build pooling and build queuing and all that stuff. Yeah, that works.
All right, thanks.
Question here?
Yeah.
Middle?
So you showed us how to do reporting using Excel against your team query, your work item queries as your data source, which is really cool. But is there also a way to use that as your data source in reporting services reporting?
So yes, you can. We still support reporting services reporting. There's a cube there, and in fact, there's a bunch of stuff I didn't talk about. There's a new relational warehouse, so that a lot of people find managing a relational warehouse easier than a cube. So we've got a relational warehouse and an improved cube, all of which can be used from reporting services. And quite a few reports that we ship in TFS 2010 are still based on reporting services.
All right. The other question I had was, did you also make it, did you do anything to make it easier to paste images from the clipboard in as an attachment to a work item?
I'm sad to say not yet.
Too bad. Thanks.
Yes. Over here.
Okay. I saw you have a new work item test case. I just wondered the states and the transitions of test case, what it looks like, because test case is a little bit different from other, like a task or bug, right? It's kind of repeatedly for each iteration, maybe. Or maybe in some iteration, maybe in all iterations.
Yeah, so we do use the work item system store for test cases, not because they are like work items in the sense that they have a beginning, you complete them, and then they're done, but because they are similar in the sense that you want customizable metadata to be able to define them, you want history to be able to track them, you want customizable forms, you want workflow. So we've built test case management. I didn't demo it. There's going to be another talk on the test features in Team System. But we've built it into the server, and all of the stuff that I showed you, the query stuff, the hierarchy stuff, all of that stuff applies to test cases the same way it applies to work items.
It's one more question here. Is there a building report to figure out my test cases and the coverage and pass rate for a particular build in when you release this one in production?
Yes, all of that data is in the data warehouse, and you can write reports to get that. And we provide some out of the box. If they don't cover quite what you need, you can customize them. Okay? Over here?
My question is about merging the parallel development.
Yes.
The merging, actually, with the 2005 and 2008 also, I found that it's not really very futuristic, and it always gives you conflict, even if the conflict is, as long as the file is changed, it will just show that as a conflict. So the changes are done. The whole meaning of parallel development is there's something changed in two branches in the same file, but they are totally unrelated things.
Yes.
And I find it very difficult for my team to keep the both the branches in sync, because there's a lot of manual merging required in that.
There are a bunch of cases where we generate false conflicts today that we've fixed. Now, that said, if the two files have changed, we still generate a conflict. Lots of people want to know if the two files change. They don't trust the automated merge to know that it generated a correct result. We do have an auto merge. I didn't demo it, but there's an auto merge capability in the new resolve experience that's more flexible than the current one. So you can say automatically merge all files that have edits that don't conflict, if that's what you want.
Auto merge in 2010? Or is it the same as 2008?
Because it is an improved. There is an auto merge in 2008. The one in 2010 is improved.
Okay. So you basically, the conflict, if the file has changed in both the branches, you will call it a conflict.
Yes, we still call it a conflict.
And it won't merge until you auto merge it, man.
Or yes.
Okay.
That's right. Middle?
That's awesome. So I have two questions. The first is about TFS web access. Is the web access for 2010 going to be just as functional as the integrated client?
Yes, the web access for 2010 is going to be just as functional. In fact, I should have mentioned this earlier. I meant to. There's a CTP coming out. I think you're going to get it tomorrow. The web access is there, and you'll see it has all these capabilities in it.
My second question was about process guidance. Any tools or updates to tools for making your own process guidance or work item template editing?
No. It's the story for creating your own process is the same. an area we'd like to invest in, but have not had the opportunity yet. Over here.
For dates with iterations, any work done in that space so that when you want to run a report, that data is, that metadata is stored in the warehouse or in TFS rather than in an Excel or project directly?
Yeah, not yet, no.
Okay.
It's something we really want. We don't have it yet.
Okay.
Over here? You have to wait for them to kick you in. There you go.
Yeah. Are there any plans to support NetBeans like you do Eclipse?
I'm sorry, are there any plans to support
NetBeans, the Sun Java IDE?
None that I know of, and I don't think TeamPrize is planning on it either. So, no, you can run the Team Explorer sort of side by side with it or use the command line, but we don't have any IDE integration with NetBeans.
Okay.
So, working with custom build tasks, am I required now to build a correlating workflow item as well?
So,
or workflow activity?
You're not required to. So there's you have a lot of options. One, we still use MS Build to build the thing. So you could still use MS Build tasks to extend your build. We do now also support workflow, which supports things like parallelization and stuff like that. You can build a customization of the build without ever writing a line of code or building a custom task, just by manipulating by using our pre-existing tasks and manipulating the flow of data between them.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Over on the right.
What are you doing in the area of collecting requirements?
So in the area of collecting requirements, we're not doing anything right now. We've done a bunch of work with the traceability in order to manage the requirements. But for the moment, collecting requirements is still a partner opportunity. There are several. Ravenflow, Personify Design has a Word integration. It's not an offering that we have right now. Middle.
Ooh. Question is, what about custom queries parameters for work items? Like there are predefined me and project parameters. I know that the functionality is there behind the skins, but not exposed to UI.
Yeah, we've not exposed it to make it extensible. There's still just the built-in queries, the built-in parameters.
The second question is, this cool branching visualization functionality, will it pick up existing source code, existing merges and branches as well?
Yes.
When will you upgrade?
The one thing you have to do to use that stuff, you'll notice in the Team Explorer that the branches were identified as separate icons. I didn't demo it, but you have to go in and take all of your existing branches and mark them as branches. We have to know what your branches are, but we give you the ability to go back to your old source code and mark what your branches are. Okay. I'm afraid this is going to be the last question, and then I'll take questions up here.
Will you integrate with the project server?
Yes, we will be integrating with project server.